Street Podcast. All the latest news, interviews, tips, and techniques from the world of field, 3D, and target archery.
Hello and welcome. This is the Barebow Archery Podcast. I'm your host, Glenn Pringle. Glad you could join us here on the podcast. Stay tuned. Our mission is to keep you updated with everything that's going on in the world of barebow archery, from field, 3D, and target. We're here to introduce you to new products, shooting techniques, and styles of barebow recurve archery.
Hit the X with the Barebow Archery Podcast.
World Archery have recognized barebow for official target rounds. Barebow is included in the new World Archery Rulebook on January the 15th, 2020. So now you can obtain world records for the 18, 25 and 50 metre WA rounds. Head on over to worldarchery.org to find out more. A couple of weeks back, it was the 2020 Lancaster Classic. Another great barebow event. The barebow category was won by John Dillinger of the USA and in the women's class by Lena Björklund of Sweden. Check out the Lancaster Archery YouTube channel to see the men's and women's barebow finals. And it's now that time of year for the Vegas shoot, the world's biggest indoor archery event. February 7th to the 9th, 2020 at the South Point Hotel in Vegas. Head on over to thevegasshoot.com to find out more. And incidentally, our first guest heads out to Vegas this week to shoot in the new barebow recurve class. Maria Ollison burst onto the barebow scene in mid-2019 with a rapid progression in her barebow shooting skills. She converted from compound 8 months ago. That's right, just 8 months ago. She took first at the JVD Kings of Archery in her first major shoot since turning to barebow, and she got third at the Roma Indoor Trophy against some serious female barebow competition. We caught up with Maria at her home in Denmark just before she flew out to Vegas. Maria tells us about getting into archery, staying focused in competition, and shooting under pressure.
Maria.
Hello, Maria. It's Glenn.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Maria, just tell us how you got started in archery, and where did you first see it, and what made you want to do it?
Well, that's pretty many years ago. It was in the late 1994. Where my school had an event. Actually, it was a whole week where we could get to try something different sports than the usual. And archery was one of them. I always liked Robin Hood, so I was like, oh yeah, let's try it. And we went and I had a lot of fun. I couldn't hit anything. Actually, I was pretty bad. So that's probably how I started.
It sounds pretty good, cool kind of school. At my school, we never had any events like that where you could try anything dangerous like archery. So yeah, it sounds pretty cool. And even though you didn't hit anything, did that spark something in you? Did you take it up straight away, or did you kind of put it on the back of your mind and then get on with other things?
No. I took it up straight away. I went back to my mom and said, I want to do archery. And she was like, are you sure? I was like, oh yeah. And after a month, I was like, can I try the compound? It looks so great. And even though I had tried barebow, I had tried recurve, I couldn't hit a shit. I took up the compound and hit very well. I was hooked.
Excellent. So, was it kind of a love at first sight thing once you got the compound then?
Yeah. Kinda. Yes.
Kinda. Is that because you could hit things?
Yes, and I started to win things, and that just made it even more fun.
Cool. So was that the kind of turning point for you where you thought, now I can hit things, now I can, compete with other people in this class and I could maybe win things? Was that kind of a turning point where maybe you invested a bit more of your time and a bit more of your energy?
Definitely. And also that I had a coach that was brilliant, and he made time for me, so I literally shot 5 days a week.
Excellent.
Sometimes it was only my coach and me, but I got the time for to do it.
And was that really important, do you think, having the coach there almost from was that almost from the kind of start? Did you realize that if I want to get good at this, that I need to be with a coach, I need to kind of learn how to do this properly? Was that something you did right from the start?
I'm more thinking that the coach picked me. I'm not sure if it was a benefit from the start, but definitely later on. In Denmark, we also have coaches to our children when they start, and if they actually want to do something with it, no matter if they can hit or not. There's always some coach that do an extra effort to this kid.
Yeah, that sounds really positive. Is that something kind of in terms of like, I mean, I don't know very much about archery outside of the UK, and just because of the kind of the podcasts, YouTube channels and stuff like that, I know a little bit about the kind of thing that goes on in America, but in terms of, other countries in the world, I mean, what kind of did you go from the school into a club, or did you have a coach privately, or how what's Denmark like in terms of archery?
I went to a club, and the club, well, I went to a large club, so they had, I think it was five coaches at that time to about 50 children.
Okay, I mean that's okay. Did the, like you said, the coach did the coach picked you. How did that come about?
I'm not sure actually. Maybe because I looked at him and said something like, please? I don't know. Maybe he just lit the look, or maybe it was the text that made him like, well, okay, if you want to do it, I will definitely help her.
No, that's good. That's good. And so you went on into compound and you started to win things. I mean, how quickly did that come about? Was it easy, the transition? Say you tried recurve and you tried barebow, and then you'd gone on to onto compound, and you found that you could, hit the middle and win in competitions. Was that a fairly quick thing? Were you, I know people say that word
Yeah,
talented, and it's kind of a, yeah.
I really was. I think I won the nationals in less than half a year, and a couple of weeks, no, month before that, I won another big event. So I was pretty talented.
Cool.
Actually, I scared away 2 kids because I was starting to win against them each time. That was a little bit bad.
I mean, it sounds like you spotted this thing and you were like, I want to do that. Are you kind of a fairly decisive person? You kind of set your mind to something and that's it, you do it, or you see something and you make your mind up there and then, and that's the kind of thing. Are you kind of a focused, decisive person?
Yes. Or a little bit maniac, likely. If I set up to do something, I definitely set everything into it.
So you put all of your effort you just go for it.
Absolutely.
And do you think that's...
I was actually pretty scared when I changed to Babel because I was like, am I good enough? Can I do this? Or am I just totally failure like when I began?
And what was it like when you began?
I was in the middle, top middle, with the compound. I didn't never get higher than about 560, 570. Only had a couple of times above 570, so I was never kind of in the elite. So to change to Babel, and suddenly I was starting a little bit behind the guys, but after a couple of months, I began to win it all, and I don't know. I was like, okay, let's do some more effort, and I've never, with the compound, really shot more than 300 arrows a week, and suddenly I shot 500.
Wow, I mean that's a lot to a lot of arrows to shoot in a week. Do you work as well? So are you trying to balance archery with your life outside, away from archery?
Yeah, I have work 37 hours a week. So it's like I'm going to work for 8 o'clock in the morning and comes home something between 21, 23 in the evening. And so my home basically are mostly like a hotel room. I just sleep there.
And obviously.
But I also seems to be behind everyone else. So I knew that I needed to do an extra effort to get just in the same height as everyone else.
And are you still being coached for the Barebow, or are you kind of doing it more independently?
I have a coach. I have two or three. I have a mental coach that is with me every tournament, not with me like he's showing up, but I'm online with him, so if I'm like doing well or doing very bad, I'm just writing to him and he writes something back and I was like, okay, there's something that can take my focus off and he knows what I'm doing, I know what I'm doing, so let's just do it.
I mean,
that's kind of cool.
That's a very important thing. I'm glad you mentioned the kind of mental side to archery. A lot of people focus on tuning equipment, but I'm not an expert, but I don't really think that's where the gains are. I think the gains are in a consistent form, a shot process, a mental process. How do you do the mental coaching? So how did it come about, and you know, what kind of advice does your mental coach offer you? And you must have to build up a good relationship with them so that, you know, they know how you're thinking.
Yeah. I was so lucky that we have a pretty good junior compound archer in Denmark, Simon Olsen. And his father worked the same place where I work.
Oh, that's good.
I have to move work to do it, but anyway, and I asked him kindly and he was like, yeah, of course, let's do it. And maybe it's because he can't do it for his own son, but maybe it was just because he's actually very kind. I hope for the last. but it's very nice to have someone to just lay all my mental game at. If I'm down, I can just say, in this week it has been like that and that, and work is pretty bad and so on, and he's responding a little bit, and then he knows which kind of mental game I have going on that week.
So does he offer you something then to kind of get you back to where you were?
Actually, it's pretty much just keep saying the same thing, like having fun, relax, think your shit through every time. I'm like, can't get the time on the line to do it every time, and so sometimes it's a little mix on the line, behind the line, but keep thinking the perfect shot, because if you can do that mental, your muscles kind of think you did it
Yeah, because
way.
your mind doesn't know the difference, really, does it? That if you rehearse that perfect shot,
Exactly.
it doesn't really know the difference. So you've just programmed a good shot in. I've read a lot of stuff with Lanny Basham, an Olympic shooter, a gold medal winner for the US, and he talks about he couldn't get to training. He'd been posted at a base. The nearest range was a 4 or 5 hour drive away. So he couldn't practice, and he just did dry fire drills where just lifting, going through the motions, putting the rifle down. But then he said he reinforced that with, hours of visualizing he was there on the line in the comp and how he was going to shoot every shot a perfect shot. And then he would go and win the competition. And he said, I'd already won it in my mind before I'd got there. Is that something you do as well? Or is it more immediate? Is it more on the day? On the line, is that
No,
some
I definitely also do it at home. I actually today I was washing my clothes, and I was going to the machine, and I was thinking about my shot. I wasn't thinking about what I was doing in the moment, but I was going through my shot. So it just popped out in my head, and I was like, okay, so it's time to think the good shot.
Is that something you do regularly, or is it just randomly the kind of, you're taking a like a menial task, something you don't really have to concentrate on? But that thought
Both.
pops up. Both. And on the day
Yeah.
as well, are you kind of focused on the day, or are you more, is it more about you being relaxed and kind of thinking, I just need to have some fun here. I can only shoot good if I have fun or something like that?
A little bit both, because if you're just having fun, then you can occupy your mind so you don't think that much about your shot, and the shot will go well because you don't use your mind too much. But you can overthink it because you suddenly think, oh my, I should try to think a little bit more. And then I feel relaxing if I just go back and think how easy the shot can be. Keep it simple with a good speech. And then I can get through the shot and go on the line and do it a little bit easier and with the less overthinking. So
One of the difficulties of kind of coaching for the kind of mental aspect is that the different ways that people think. Some people are visual thinkers, some people use language, sounds, feelings, sensations. Do you actually visualize yourself making the shot, or is it the feeling of the shot, or do you talk yourself with words through a language and stuff like that, or is it even completely different from that?
I'm a little bit 60-40. 60, I'm visual myself, and 40, it's a feeling.
Cool.
So both visualizing and feeling.
So a combination there. So, it must really, if you can feel and kind of see the shot at the same time, it must really reinforce it for you. And do you do that every shot on every end, or is it only when you kind of think, I wasn't 100% with that last shot, or is it a consistency thing where you're kind of mentally consistent, you do the kind of rehearsal or the visualization and you take the shot, or do you visualize during the shot? Because I've heard people say to me, when I'm actually at full draw, I visualize the arrow flying from the bow and hitting right in on the X, and at that point in my mind I've given a perfect shot and that's my trigger, and then the arrow goes and I hit the middle.
It's a little bit I change a little bit between them because if I'm really, really not doing well, or just behind my competition, then I'm visualizing between the shots, or between the ends. Sometimes I combine it with letting my arms doing the shot, with the thinking part as well combined. And sometimes I think I don't have that much time to think the shot between the shooting. And then I'm starting a thinking what I'm doing, like 1 second faster than I'm actually doing it. So I'm a little bit,
Just almost rehearsing it
yeah.
in the moment just before it's about to happen. So that kind of that
Exactly.
thought and that feeling's kind of fresh and you're there and you're going,
Yes.
does it become like a bit of a checklist then that you can kind of you've just felt that kind of motion or that movement or that position and then you do it and you kind of think, yep, that's one ticked off. Do you kind of go through it sequentially like that, or is it not that kind of structured?
It can be that kind of structure. I have a checklist, like I'm raising my arm, I'm pulling back, going to anchor. I actually aiming a quarter of a second or something, so I'm sure that my aim is right. And then I'm thinking more about how to get through the shot and release. So that's my checklist. So I can be a little bit further in my mind.
Do you find that, especially in, say, a head-to-heads where you can obviously see your progress, you can see the other archer's progress, if you kind of allow that to kind of intrude and maybe you've got cameras and lights and that kind of thing, does that help focus your mind and take the distractions away?
Definitely. Because your mind can only think one thing at a time. So if you can get it to think the right things, then it can't think about everything else, like how many that look at you or how many that look at the streaming of you and so on.
Do you stay in that mental state, or do you, is it kind of like a wave of ups and downs that you kind of you hope to peak when you're in the shot?
Yes. I was once told that you can't have the same set of mind and be that focused all the time. Absolutely not in an 4 to 6 hours competition. So it is important to be very focused when you're doing the shot, be a little less in between, and just open up when you're behind the line.
Do you find that this you, it kind of works all of the time for you, or does it have it up, its ups and downs? Is that when you kind of reach for the coach at that, the mental coach at that stage?
Yes, it's ups and downs. Actually, I also reach from the coach when it's ups. I had a, well, the same day that, okay, now I hit 18 arrows in the yellow. I actually wrote it to my coach from the 12 arrows and 12, 15, 18, 21. I think the next thing I wrote to him was like 23. Now we are starting over again. But it was like I had to came out with it, not just keep it in.
Yeah, so you.
Because when I came out with it, I could let it go.
Right, so you were kind of saying to him, look, this is where we are now. That kind of brought the tension and the anxiety down for you. It kind
Yeah.
of let it out. At that point, you could let that go then. That was in the past. It's done. Next and
Absolutely.
the next. But
Yeah.
that's a really cool way of doing it. Because there's always this thing of, don't look at the score, don't think about the score. But if you can look at the score and then go, that's the score. I've sent that score to someone. Someone's kind of logged it. But for me, it's now done. It's the next arrow.
Yes. Well, actually, see how many yellows I can do in a row. Came from our 24-hour shoot. We have it every year. Barbell, longbow, and recurve has all the yellow as a 10. And if we could do a perfect round at 300, we could get a t-shirt. So my goal is to get the t-shirt. So my goal is now to, if I can do it just once at a competition at home, I don't care. Can I do it once? I can do it again. That's my goal, to just count the yellows. And it also takes my mind off what I'm actually doing in counting. So I'm not thinking that much about the count, but I'm more thinking about everything else.
This is the Verbo Archery Podcast.
Roughly how long have you been in Verbo when you made the switch? What made you make the switch? And I presume a lot of the stuff you did in compound, because clearly you've been involved in archery for a long time. You've kind of gone through the competition nerves and kind of learning competitions and all of that kind of thing. How did the transfer from compound to Verbo go? How long ago was it? And what made you make that switch?
Well, that's actually a pretty fun story, because the first time I did the 24-hour tournament, I was like, okay, I did it with the compound. I was like, I'm never gonna do this again. It's too hard with a compound. So the next year I bought a Verbo. And I was like, okay, it's so much easier with the Verbo. The next year I upgraded it to a recurve. That was also fun, but not that fun. Too much aiming pad.
And
then I got an injury in my shoulder when I picked up the compound again for 11 years ago, by shooting too much. Actually, my old coach told me that it's okay if the muscles hurt. He didn't tell me how much or how less they much hurt, so I just shot 15 arrows too much a day.
Yeah.
And got a shoulder injury that I thought I've never heard it was possible, so I went 9 months before I got anything checked. And that shoulder injury just keep getting up, and then I could get it down, and after 10 years I was like, this is not good. And I realized in the 24-hour competition that my shoulder actually liked the Verbo or recurve. It didn't get worse. It kind of got better when I was doing that bow. So I was a little bit decided that maybe, maybe not. Then in Denmark, to the national indoor competition, 2019, we were needed to get the non-sight and the sight archers in two different days. So I was like, okay, well, 2 weeks after Vegas, I could practice like 5 times or something, and then I could do the nationals with Verbo and see how it goes. And it actually did pretty well. I got a new springer that got me to lose in the semifinals, but I was pretty good. I was 9 points from the national record at that time, so I was like, okay, if I can do this in 1.5 week, what can I do if I actually put everything in it and really do it?
Wow. So that was, was that 1.5 weeks after taking up Verbo, you nearly shot the national record?
Yes.
Wow.
I did 489
Wow.
points.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. And at that point, you kind of thought, well, if I practice a bit, I could be quite good at this.
I realized that I could quickly be one of the best in Denmark.
And is there a kind of very active archery or bear bow scene in Denmark?
No, not that. Well, we are about 2,500 to 2,800 archers in Denmark, and maybe 500 of them go to competitions.
Right.
Most of them just want to go in the club, do some shooting, and thinking they're not good enough to do competition, and then they don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fairly common thing I see here. I mean, we have, in the United Kingdom, we have around 45,000 archers registered with Archery GB, which is one of the organisations which is kind of affiliated with World Archery. There's around 5,000 or 6,000 with NFAS, which is kind of very similar to the IBO in America, which I think some people will be more familiar with. And that's kind of primarily just 3D archery, 40 targets or 36 targets, anything from 5 yards to 100 yards. But they're, despite the smaller numbers, they're very, very active. And then we have the EFAA, SFAA, the Welsh and the Irish kind of IFAA. I don't know how many archers. I think it will be a bit smaller than the NFAS. But yeah, we've got a lot of archers in between NFAS and Archery GB, somewhere just over around 50,000. But you do see a lot of people in the club kind of going, no, I'm not really confident about competitions. Have you got any kind of advice for anyone out there that's currently just kind of shooting their local club and local round? What would you kind of say? Look, we don't bite people's heads off. Just come and have a go.
Well, I would just say, do it. Go to a competition. Have fun. Try it. You might learn something. You might get some new friendships. I know I have. So just do it. It's so much fun.
My first competition was indoors, and the English longbow people have like this ground marker, which usually is like a cuddly teddy bear or a minion or something like that. And that's where they aim their arrow. And then they're obviously hoping to hit the middle of the yellow. but they're very precious about these marks, and they put them at various distances between the shooting line and the target. And I remember being so nervous that I would be carrying the scoreboard, trying to write the scores down, and all the meantime, kicking everyone's their sight marks off the floor. And they were kind of very forgiving the first time, but after about 4 or 5 times, the kind of patience were a bit thin. But I was very nervous in my first one. But it's something you get over. And like you said, you know, you might make new friendships. You will definitely meet new people that don't shoot at your club. And no one's expecting you to win. No one's expecting you to learn all the rules. You know, if you were starting just as a bare bow right from the start, I mean, what would you recommend how people in Denmark, or any other country for that matter, how would people say from Denmark get into bare bow?
I would recommend to do it starting in a club, and you can borrow everything the first couple of months, half a year, just to build up the muscles and everything, so you don't buy anything that's not you at the beginning. So it's quite normal to just use your club's equipment. We start everyone with bare bow. It's like a beginner thing, but just to ease the game, so you don't have to think about how to aim and everything else that can actually make it all very much too much to think about. So we start at Berbo. We normally say at least a couple of months, because then you can do the shoot and you know where the shoulder should be, they should be down, you know a little bit how to push in the bow and how to relax your fingers when you want to release it.
What is the national organization called in Denmark, if anyone from Denmark was listening and they wanted to kind of get involved and find a local club?
It's called Archery Denmark, or in Danish, it's Buskydning Denmark.
That's easier for you to say than me.
Moment, yeah. We only have one organization at the moment. I know there are another one that's kind of trying to be, but we only have one.
What would be the three tips if someone wanted to start Barebow, especially, because that's what we're here for Barebow. Somebody, not necessarily was a beginner, they could be a beginner, but if they wanted to switch from Olympic recurve or compound, what would three things that you would kind of say the kind of fundamentals if they wanted to do it and be competitive?
Get a coach, go to another good shooter, because then you can get the tips to do it right from the beginning. Another advice would be, don't hesitate to do it. Just do it if you want to. It's actually easier than you think, probably. And remember to have fun. That's the absolutely most important thing. And so much easier with a Babel to remember to have fun, because everyone that do it is like, we need to remember that. Look at the recurve, they're just never happy. Compounders yep. are a little bit better, but definitely far behind Babel.
Yeah, and there seems to be a nice kind of community that's a sharing community within Barebow, and people do seem to have more of a smile on their face. They're not as serious on the line. I'm not saying that's everyone's like that who shoots a recurve, but yeah, there definitely seems to be a community behind Barebow, maybe because it's so small, and information about Barebow coaching equipment was at some stage hard to come by. What resources did you use? Facebook groups or websites, podcasts or anything like that to kind of help you along? Was there anything that you found useful, or being part of a community?
Actually, the first time to learn it before a 24-hour tournament, I went to Klaus Pinball, which is our far best barebow shooter in Denmark at the moment. He mostly do 3D, but a little bit indoor. But I went to him and he gave me like 10 things I needed to remember. And he actually yelled a little bit about it if I just forgot one thing. But it was great to get all the things right from the beginning. And when I picked up the Babel for sure last March 9 last year, I went to another former Babel archer, Tom Kramer, that also have done very well in 3D back in time when he was still competition archer. And he gave me some tips, and from time to time I talk with him or meet him at his club and get some more tips.
Sounds like a brilliant resource to kind of have there. You can go and ask the questions, because sometimes the internet's full of advice that's not, shall we say, not the best advice. So
yeah, I knew that a lot of about artists in Denmark was like, well, try and look at YouTube. I was like, well, I don't know what to look for, and I'm not sure if that I'm looking at actually are the right thing, or it's like a something I shouldn't do. So how can I know it's good or bad advice?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a very good move, and having that resource there of Klaus Pimbo and Tom Kramer was brilliant for you. And you say that they did 3D to a high level. Do you do 3D yourself, or field archery? Are you just sticking to the indoors and the target at the minute?
I'm sticking to the target. I did a couple of years. I did 3D with the compound, but I'm too afraid of falling down from high level. So I'm not good at the terrain. So I'm kind of like having more fear than I'm just having fun. So that's not fun for me.
Yeah, yeah.
This year I actually said no thanks to be on the 3D national team at the same reason.
So you're sticking with target and you're doing very, very well at it. How was Kings of Archery for you? I mean, can you talk us through that?
Well, the Kings of Archery was, I always liked it. I only went there one time before, and it was a totally different place. So it was like, oh yeah, there's Babo, and I actually can get a place to do it. So I got a ticket, and I was like, yay, I'm going there. and yeah, it was pretty nice. So it was my second time at Kings of Archery, and my first time was Barebow International, so I didn't know what to expect. But I did know how a huge tournament would be and how many nerves I would have, probably would have. But I was still like, well, I'm a newbie to this game, so I don't know. And people didn't know me and was like, okay, I'm like a nobody. It's kind of nice. and then we started shooting. I was very lucky to have a couple of Danish fellow shooters right beside me, so it was a little bit homey.
Yeah, that's good.
But also I was shaking like hell. I have never shaken that much. I have tried Vegas. The first time I went there, I was sweating before I even got the bow in my hand. But at the Kings of Archery, I was shaking and I couldn't hit that well. I was like, holy crap. And everyone else was like the same. I was like, okay, this is not that fun, but, and then I just missed. I was like, okay, now it just doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just shooting.
Do you think that really
find
helped
my game point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm nowhere near your level. I have no delusions of where I am in terms of my archery. Yeah, I've found that I've started with a bad end, and then kind of well, that's it. I'm not going to do well today. I've started with like a 22, or maybe even a 21, and then it's been 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10,
yeah,
10, 10, 9, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 9, 10, 9, 9, 10, 10, 10, and then so was that the switch for you? That kind of did you kind of say, oh well, let's just shoot, let's have fun, and did the nerves kind of dissipate?
The nerves dissipate. It was actually like, okay, so this is how it should feel. It was like my body just relaxed and just did what it used to do. It was quite nice, and then I just came from the middle and just went up and got another clear, I was in the middle of everything, and suddenly I was like number four or something, and I was like, okay, this is getting better and better, and suddenly I was just number one. I was like, holy shit, I did it. I actually did it. So, I didn't quite believe it at that moment. I actually didn't believe it like before, half an hour before the finals.
So how were you feeling when, so you're obviously, you were shaking, you must have been very tense. It must have been hard to shoot your first few ends with that kind of the shakes going on.
yeah.
You're coming from a state of anxiety, and then where are you going after that? When you've had that, did you miss? Was it a miss, or was it, did you just kind of put it somewhere you didn't want to go, and you thought, wow, well, that's it, it's over? And what was the change in feeling that, and emotion that you had at that stage?
I was like the only Babel archer at that point that was doing a triple phase. Because it might be from my compound time that I'm more relaxed in a triple phase than if I knew to put three arrows in the same space.
Is that the Vegas type triple, where it's the kind of triangular one, or is this the vertical triple?
In Kings of Archery, it was the Vegas triangle.
And just for those that don't know the Kings of Archery, it's a competition in Holland. Yeah, that's correct.
Yes,
and it's
the biggest tournament in Europe.
And
kind of.
It looks like they've stepped it up. It's an 18 meter shooting line, shooting distance, and you've got a three spot or a single spot, and it's a 40 centimeter, and they count the whole of the yellow as a 10. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And then it looks like they've really stepped up. Did they have a new venue this year?
Yes, it was quite big. I think they had it last year as well.
And so
they had this big, big indoor place, and they had the castle in the middle where you were shooting. So you just went to another room in the room, which was quite nice.
Were there... How many shooters on your detail were there? So I presume they did it, you know, two or three details throughout the day to get. There must be, what is there, something like a couple of thousand at the Kings of Archery?
I think it's 900 or 1,000.
Right, okay.
But they had three groups to shoot in.
Right.
To get everyone through.
Yep. And then you qualified in what position again?
First.
I just wanted to get you say it. So you qualified in first. And then at that moment, what are you thinking? What are you feeling?
Happy, scared at the same time. I couldn't believe it, actually. It was quite weird because I was like, okay, I knew that I could beat the boys at home, but this was international and all the good people was coming, and I knew that Cynthia from Italy had a national record higher than mine. So
she's a good shooter.
I was like, yes, she's really good. So it was quite nervous to just knew that from the beginning, but I didn't think that much about it. And then I got to shoot with her on the second day, the last 30 arrows. And then I realized, well, she's just like everyone else, barrel archers, very cool, very nice. The good part was that even if she's an Italian girl, she can speak English. So that was also a barrier to break down. So we just have a lot of fun. So that kind of take a little bit off the nerves until we came to the finals, because we were the first one to do the finals, and we were had never done it before, any of us at the Kings of Archery, because actually it was first time with Babel. So everyone was like, well, what to expect, what to do, a little bit nervous, and we also had to wait 10 minutes because the juniors or masters, something, had to get the trophies. So in those 10 minutes, I went from being very nervous to just being kind of relaxed, but still a little bit nervous, but from the bad to a good nervous. So I...
A positive, positive
turn
energy.
Turn it around. Yes, turn it around to be a force to me and not against me.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was focused a lot of how I was breathing. I didn't talk so much with the others, but I talked a little bit because I find a little bit chatting relaxing.
Yeah, kind of a distraction from the nerves.
Yes.
And you came out to what music again?
Sebastian's song from The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I recognised it. My kids love it.
And me too.
Excellent. Did that calm you down as well? I mean, I can imagine if you've got something, you know, quite heavy and that gets you pumped up, that could possibly work against you. It may not. It may be that kind of personality. But did that, having that thing that you love, did that help? Did that calm you down?
Yes. Yes, definitely. I also think that being the last one out was good for me, because then I shouldn't wait that long to shoot. So that was quite nice.
And I liked the staging with the kind of darkened room. And
I love it.
How did you find it?
I simply love it. the dark room and the lights only on the venue is very, very good. The high music, loud music, was also good, because then I was like focusing. I couldn't see how many spectators. Sorry. There were, so I could only see the 9 people on the shooting line. So I was like, okay, we are 9 and a judge and probably also someone that was streaming it live. So I didn't feel that we were that many people, so I didn't think about it that much. I was just thinking about showing the compounders how to do a babo. yeah.
Well, that sounds cool.
I have, yeah, there were some compounders that recognized me because I have been to a couple of international tournaments each year the last 5 years. So my goal was really to show up and show them that Babel is a thing. So when I started, well, actually we had 3 arrows to practice, just to know how to aim because of the light and so on, just to get a little bit nerves coming down. I did 3 9s or something. I was like, couldn't it just count? And then we got back. Well, actually, the others got back, and I was like, okay, I had my target changed to a triple face, but it was only put in the top, but not in the bottom. So I was kind of trying to put the pin in, and it was like very difficult to put in because of some black shield they had put on.
So was the face not fixed onto the target properly?
No, it wasn't. So.
Oh dear, it's something you can do without.
To put in I couldn't. I was like, well, okay, I'm just smiling, laughing a little bit, and try to get help. And then the help came, and I was like, okay, you put it in, I go down and prepare myself. So I was like, okay, this is just too fun. I was laughing a little bit, and then I pick up the bow, and we like called out, and I was starting shooting. I made a perfectly very nice shot, but just was in the eight. I was like, oh, this is not good. I'm not winning now. Well, what the heck? Okay, I'm just shooting. I still need to show the damn compounders how to do this game. And then I made a very nice recurve turn, and then I made a compound turn. I was like, okay, that's my goal. I did it. And I was like, oh, I haven't really thought about how it went to the other competitors. I noticed that Cynthia came back from the line a little bit not happy, but I didn't thought that much about it at the time. Then we walked down to the targets. I was looking a little bit around. I was like, oh, they were nervous and didn't put that many arrows in the yellow. And I was like, I wonder. I looked at Cynthia's and she was having two very beautiful turns, really recurve turns, and a four. I was like, oh, did I win? Did I actually win? I didn't knew it at that time, and suddenly it just, yeah, I actually won.
Wow. I mean,
it was very weird.
And what was the kind of feeling like? Was it, were you relieved or happy?
Happy. Very happy. I couldn't stop smiling. I couldn't stop waving. I was just like, holy shit, I did it. Okay. Actually, and then I thought, now I need to go home and bake some cakes because everyone expects me to bring cake when I win.
Is that at work or is that at the club, your archery club?
It's actually both at work and in both of my archery clubs.
So you've done a lot of baking recently?
Yes.
So after that, you decided to do Rome. Was that the first time?
Yeah, Rome was my first time there. I actually only decided because Martin Damsbo, a great Danish compound archer that has been there for the last 30 years or 25 at least, we started nearly at the same time in the 90s. And he was like, you need to do Rome. You need to do Rome. I was like, I'm not good enough. And after Kings of Archery, I was like, okay, maybe I need to do Rome. And I decided to go when I heard that Jan Demmer and Grayson and Eric Yost would be there. I was like, okay, there are some Bebo shooters that I have ridden a little bit with. It could be cool to meet them as well. So let's do Rome. Why not?
And did you Did you go over there? Did you meet up with everyone? How was that? I mean, was that something you did before you shot, or did you kind of chat on the line or chat after your detail and stuff like that?
I was feeling that I needed to have the Friday off because I had done shooting or training every day of the week. So I just needed to have a day off to be sure that my muscles weren't that crazy the next day under the competition. So I was just meeting up, getting my shooting number, and went to the hall and meet them, and just went used the 4 or 5 hours or something with them, just looking, chatting, getting to know everyone else around me. It was quite nice, very nice.
That sounds great. There's kind of more of a kind of social element to it, not just the archery, but you're there and you're kind of chatting away with everyone, and it's kind of a more social, friendly, relaxed atmosphere.
Yes. I actually remember that. I can't remember if it was in one of the podcasts or if it was down there that Jan Demmer mentioned that he actually felt it more like being practicing than being actually shooting a competition, because everyone just chatting and having fun, and it was a very nice venue and a very nice time to do shooting there.
So during the qualification, how did you feel that you shot? How did you get in the zone? Did you need your mental coach at that stage? And had you made any kind of changes before you came into that competition?
I definitely needed my coach, because I was, on the Friday, I was asking if it was possible to have a triple face instead of a full face or single face, whatever it's called. And they were like, well, maybe, maybe not. We are looking into it. And the next day when I came there, I was like, okay, they actually gave me a triple face, and then they move it all around, and I got to have a full face, single face. And I was like, well, okay, I'll still have an hour. I can mentally set me up to do it. I knew it was a possibility that I couldn't get the triple face. So I went out, I was looking, okay, the paper says I should be here, but I didn't get the number to put on my quiver. I was like, okay, where is that? Then they came with the pads to enter our points in, and I was like, I'm not either on the pad. So I was asking the person that lay out the pads, where should I be? And he was like, okay, I'm just asking. And then it was a little bit out of my zone, because it was like moving in the last second, 2 minutes before we should be shooting. So that was very stressful. I was moved to be with the recurve women. They were actually pretty cool, but I only had like 5 minutes to getting to know people, and I was like, okay, I'm Babo. I need to show that there's a reason to be here, and I was pretty nervous, a lot more than in at the King's Advisory, probably because I have expectations to myself. I thought people had expectations to me. So that was kind of a mental barrier to me at the beginning. But
how did you get through that?
I also made a, well, I didn't at the beginning. I made a six, and then I shot a miss and well, actually it was a miss and then a six and then something. I was like, holy crap, and I wrote a bit with my mental coach and a couple of rounds ends later, I was more relaxing. I was like, okay, now it's going to be better. I'm got rid of the blue ones, more in the red and yellow, and after a few more ends, I was a little bit more back in where I should be with my shooting. I actually began to be better than a couple of the recurvers, so I was like, okay, now we're back. Now I could shoot.
And where did you get to at the end of that round? Where were you points-wise, position-wise?
I can't remember how many points. Yes. Well, I shot 519 and got a fourth place out of it. I was like, really? I'm number four? I hadn't imagined to be that high with that kind of shooting.
And was that, obviously the confusion with you'd made the request for the triple face and then you got the single face and then you got moved from target position, you know, to another position.
Yeah.
That must have obviously weighed on your mind at that stage, but did the expectations, you'd kind of won at the Kings of Archery, and then did you have an expectation that I must perform at this tournament? Did that really play with your mind at that stage?
Absolutely. Absolutely in the beginning. And then I took a picture of my miss and sent it to Dion Dema and wrote, well, what a start, and wrote a little bit back and forth, just like chatting, not that much about what our performance or anything. That's also made me kind of relaxed.
So you were chatting away with Dema, and that kind of helped. You said this about the Kings of Archery, that you chatted away just to kind of maybe take your mind off it. Did that, once you kind of settled, did the little bits of a chat with other people, or did that kind of bring your anxiety down as well?
Yes, definitely. And in the end of round one, I was not thinking about how other people were thinking about my shooting or anything like that. I was more like just doing a good shot.
Yeah, that's very important, isn't it? That you're not, it's the expectations. I know, again, disclaimer, I'm not at your level. So, but I find that, you know, I can shoot 525, 530, 535 in practice. And then when it comes to shooting the competition, I'm kind of starting to say to myself, well, we should be up, like, and then a figure pops in your head and immediately I'm under pressure because I'm thinking, oh, well, I've got to try and hit that score now. And at the same time, you're thinking, no, you're not. You've never shot that kind of score in competition yet. You've never shot a 535. So, no, that's not right. But then there's this kind of battle in your mind to try and meet that expectation, which,
yeah,
when the battle's being won by the expectation, that's when the reds and blues come out for me. So, yeah, I've never been at that high level, but I've definitely
had mental that. Game is definitely the biggest thing we have. Well, I'm also kind of think that we should remember we shouldn't compare it to what other people can do. We should compare to what we can do ourselves. And the mental game is, for most archers, it's 80% mental, 20% what we can do technical.
Yeah, like the form, but the form, yeah.
When we are the high level archers, it's more like a 90 to 10. So the mental game is everything.
Yeah, definitely. That's something I see. It's kind of a mistake of people who kind of just get involved in the sport, is that they think it kind of becomes this equipment, tuning, shooting, and then the kind of mental game is an actual shot process, having mental strength and having a, you know, being able to cope with tournament pressure. That's something that's so far, that's 5% for them. And from what you're saying and from what I see other people saying, it's completely on its head.
Yeah, definitely. And you can also see that the top level compounders, especially the ones that kind of doing 600 out of 600 indoor, or nearly doing that most of the times, suddenly they just came out with a 590 or something, and you just like, why? So that's probably because their mental game kicks in and they're trying to over-focus or overthinking the shot or something too much.
Yeah, I mean,
forgot to keep it simple.
Yeah, we've seen this a few times with the team sports here, and the rugby team or a football team goes in at half time and they've got a huge lead on the opposition, and they switch off, and then they come out, and then they get beaten. At one stage, they had what they thought was an unassailable lead, and their physical skill hasn't changed, their endurance, their stamina, their knowledge of the game, that hasn't changed. All that's changed is their mental approach has changed in that break in between the halves. And that's I see that and I kind of think it must be mental, because you can't in 15 minutes or in between ends, you can't lose your skill.
No, I totally agree. Actually, the day I made my national record, I was making really, really great the first half. I made a 283 or something. So I was like, holy shit, this is good. And then we had, I think it was 45 minutes break. We came out again and I couldn't find my game. I had used it all on the first 30 arrows. I was like, well, I'm winning this. I couldn't do that much and I would still win. Against the guys, I was the only girl or something. So I couldn't find that thing that could bring my game up again. That was a little bit bad.
If you're on your game, say you have just you throw one bad arrow, how do you approach that, and how do you kind of come back from that, or a bad end, but you're kind of, you're not at that stage where you've kind of given everything and you kind of think, I've got nothing else there. But if you're kind of, you're doing well or doing okay, and you have that bad arrow or that bad end, how do you kind of come back from that?
I'm trying to find how to have fun. If I'm on the line and do a bad shot, most of the time I am laughing at myself, laughing at my shot. Laugh actually get you more relaxed, so you get the tension away, and then you can shoot better. And when I get back, instead of just being unhappy or something, at the last tournament, I figured out that if I just drink a little bit, I just put all my bad shots and bad feelings and everything down in the bottle and got some good things back from the bottle. That was my mental game that day. But if there are music in the hall, then just trying to dance a little bit, singing a little bit, and really doesn't matter if everyone else looking weird at me or think I'm crazy, because I know I'm crazy. So I'm just kind of find my happy place.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. People having fun. Cool.
Yeah. It is just fun.
So Rome,
you don't die if you're doing bad.
Rome, you finished. Were you in the play, the shoot off for four?
Yeah. In the qualification, I came fourth, and I won until I met Lena in the semi-finals. Then I lost. I think I was behind 0-4, and then I came up. I had 3 points, and she was in lead with 5. So I knew I had to win the last end to get a shoot off. And then I shot pretty okay. I thought at that time I had lost the last end, and we came down and we had the same score, so it was 6-4, and I was like, damn, I just needed to shoot a 10 in the last arrow.
No pressure.
No. Blame the guys a little bit, like in Denmark, Grayson, because they didn't yell at me just to hit a 10, just for fun. I didn't really blame them because they couldn't read my mind. But I was quite happy that I was able to come back from a 0-4. So that, even that I lost, I was quite confident to get into the bronze final. And I had asked Jan Demmer the day before that if he didn't came in the gold finals and I did, if he would be my coach on this venue, and he was like, yeah, of course. So he was out in the quarter finals, and went to him and was like, Jan, I know it's not the gold, but only bronze, but will you still be my coach? And he was like, yeah, of course. So that's also calmed me a little bit down to have a bevel coach. So it was pretty nice, and then I just hit 27 each time, which luckily enough was enough to win the bronze. So I was quite happy.
Did he give you some good advice on the line?
Actually, he was, it's quite, yes, it was good advice, but he mostly just told me that it was a good shot. And then we laugh a little bit when I sometimes came back and like I was ticking in my fingers. He was like, yeah, I saw that, but it was still a good shot. So the mental game was pretty good because it just made me feel more confident in my shooting.
Great stuff. Excellent. Right, we've been on quite a while. I'd probably just want to ask you about what gear you use and how you see barebow progressing. So we might as well get on to your equipment. What did you start out with and what did you shoot King's Ave Archery with?
I was using the Velos limbs from Hoyt and Winners riser.
Was that the forged? Is that the WNS forged? Is that correct?
Yes.
And what poundage were you using at the time?
28.4, something like that.
And what kind of arrow setup did you use? Did you keep the same arrows through to the Rome shoot, or did you change up your kit in any way from Kings of Archery?
No, I did the exact same. My arrows are Carbon Express Medallion XR. At that time I used the spin wings things. So pretty much also the same kind of setup I had outdoor.
Right. 28 pounds. And what finger tab do you use? Have you got the kind of industry standard Yoast, or have you got something slightly different?
I'm not doing Yoast. I'm doing Black Mamba.
Right.
That's a really, really weird name, but still fun to say.
And have you changed any of your
equipment?
Don't
think too much about
it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we won't go there. Right. So, have you got Vegas coming up? Is that right? Are you off to the United States of America, to Vegas? So,
the
competitions are getting quite big now. I mean, we've got barebow accepted worldwide now via World Archery it was accepted in field and 3D, but in terms of target, for the indoor, the 18, the 25, and for the outdoor, the 50 meter. And now we've got Lancaster and Vegas, as well as, I think, I don't know if there was any barebow representation at the Sydney event, but with Rome JVD, there's a big buzz about barebow. And within Vegas now, barebow recurve having its own class, not shooting against the compound barebow anymore. Where do you see barebow going, and what kind of, you said you've been to Vegas before, so maybe you won't be possibly as nervous. You're kind of familiar with the venue and the kind of setup there. So with all of these big events and the kind of prize money and the people are becoming kind of celebrities, for want of a better word, where do you see kind of barebow going from here?
I'm seeing us growing. I know that a competition in Denmark a couple of years ago, they were only like 5 or 8 barebow archers. This year we were 22. So it's a huge growing up in a few years. Now it's in the international VA competition rules target. And I know that a couple of archers in Denmark only do targets as well as me, and won't do the 3D or the field. Actually, in Denmark, we don't have field. But anyway, I'm seeing it growing. Yeah, I hope that we will grow also enough so that the VA want to do international target competitions like the national
national team.
Teams can go to. I want to enter a world competition at some time, but we just need to convince the VA that it can be possible for us to do. And even if we had to do it in a non-site competition only, because they can't have any more to the competitions that are now, but just to have it, I think we can be pretty good a large number in a quite few years.
And is that outdoor as well? Do you plan on doing the 50 meter outdoor?
Absolutely. I kind of trying to get more poundage on my bow so I can aim at the target. Last year we only have 40 meters in Denmark, and I noticed that I could go out to 45 meters, still aim at the target, at the top of the target, but still in the target. But the 50 meters, I had to aim 20 centimeters above the target, and that's not quite good.
No, I mean, that's going to take a lot of mental strength to kind of keep that there. I mean, I've heard of people aiming at clouds before, and I was like, well, the problem is the clouds move.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can't expect that there are anything to aim at if you're above the target, but if you can just go in the black or something, 12 o'clock, you can actually aim at something.
Yeah, I've used the wire rest before now as kind of something to aim with, or the shelf, just as a way of keeping something on the target. It's not something I do very often. I try and shoot field more than target, but yeah, I mean, it would be good to see some international competitions at 50. There's a big push here that they love the 1440 round, the 90, 70, 50 and 30. The push from here.
I hate that. Too many barrels to shoot.
Like you were saying before about the, you know, you'd had an increase in competitors from 5 up to, what was it, 22? Something like that.
Yes.
Last year we have a kind of a county thing, so it's like small regions, and we went from 8 or maybe 10 in total across male, female and the juniors to 37, I think, last year. So yeah, that was a great
that's
improvement.
Quite an increase.
One of the local archers called Mark Robertson, he'd set up a little Facebook group just for people in the north of England, and it kind of got the word out there, and that a lot more people became encouraged to come and do a competition rather than just shoot at the club. And then we had the 50 meters, which was the first time. It was for the county, again another county competition. Mark won that. That was the 50 meter outdoor, but that was the first time we'd had it. And we went from, I think the year before there were 2 competitors, but we were shooting to 100 yards. So there were 2 competitors, I think, if my memory serves me correctly. I'm sure somebody will write in once I've said this and put it out there. But we went from 2 to 17. So again, another, you know, decent increase. It does seem to be growing. There's more interest. And I think the kind of podcasts, I mean, I was a big fan of the Push podcast. I was members of the Barebow group and the North of England Barebow archery group. So I think it kind of gets it out there. I think targeted coaching and information with things like the Barebow project, I think that will bring the level of everybody up to where the standard is very high, and you know, the national organizations start to take notice.
Yeah, I think that's one of the points, because if we don't help each other,
We'll miss the opportunity if the standards
we need to help each other. Actually, I think it's a little bit fun that Jim Demmer help others to be better than him. But that's just how we do it. We need to help each other.
Exactly. Well, Maria, it's been fascinating to speak to you. I've learned a lot myself, yeah. And I need to get some mental coaching done. I mean, there is stuff out there. Adam Cowming, I think it is, who does archery mental mastery. There's Professor Steve Peters' book, The Chimp Paradox, which I know sports organisations here use. Then there's Lanny Basham, I think, which everyone knows, the mental management. So having that kind of process and the mental side of it, I think, is key to progressing. But brilliant to speak to you, Maria, and I'll let you have your evening back now because it's been a long one.
I thought it's been a good one.
It's been great to speak to you, and I wish you the best of luck in Vegas. When are you flying out there?
Thank you. I'm flying out Monday, so I'm also being there Monday evening.
And are you kind of practicing all the way through?
Yeah. Well, the Tuesday I'm usually used to go to the northern outlet and spend all the day and a lot of money.
A bit of shopping, retail therapy.
Yeah, exactly. Then we start doing shooting Wednesday, an official practice on the Thursday, and then we start doing the official shooting Friday, Saturday, and after the Saturday we get to the flight groups and doing the last end on Sunday in the flights, where we are only shooting against those that are in the one flight you're in.
Well, hopefully you have a lot of success and you get some money back and you bring back trophy. And just keep everyone updated. I'm sure we'll all be watching it on the live feeds, and if there's any YouTube coverage, I'm sure we'll all be there rooting for you. So you have a great tournament, cool. And I wish you the best of luck. Thanks again for talking to us here.
Thanks.
Many thanks there to Maria Ollison. A really great guest. Thank you for sparing the time to come and join us here on the Barebow Archery Podcast. That's it for the first ever episode. We hope you liked it. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for the Barebow Archery Podcast.
You can contact us by
We're at Gmail, thebarebowarcherypodcast@gmail.com. Thanks once again for listening. Goodbye.
Produced and presented by Glenn Pringle for Redstone Productions Limited.